This is the Tony D Show, brought to you by Quicken Loans. Take advantage of historic low rates. Go to Rocket Mortgage today.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
Follow Tony on Twitter at Tony D Radio.
Guys, I'm bringing the party to you.
From the Quicken Loans Studios in New Jersey, here's your host, Tony Desiri.
That's hour number two here at SB Nation Radio, and we are continuing to look at the national title game from last night. Clemson, the champions of college football, after beating Alabama 35-31 in a game in which they scored 21 points in the fourth quarter. It was electrifying, at least that quarter. It was a good defensive battle, back and forth, both teams looking to find their rhythm, both teams trying to figure out what they could do. It took Clemson a while. They finally were able to realize what they could and couldn't do against Alabama's defense, but what they did do is got them tired, and then they racked up 21 points in the fourth quarter. Alabama, as I said earlier on the show today, is going to have to deal with the Sarkisian issue, because even if it's not an issue, it doesn't matter. It's just the way we're wired. I mean, it's just the way sports is. Look, I think we make too much of a lot of things, right? I think we find stories because we just don't want things to just die. We need to build it up. The Miami boat trip, for example, for Odell Beckham Jr. was created mostly because the New York media is into that kind of stuff. They're into that kind of tabloid stuff. If this had happened in for the Atlanta Falcons, I don't know if we talk about it. If this happened for the Seattle Seahawks, I don't know if we talk about it. But it's in New York, it's the Giants, there is a different media culture there, it becomes a bigger story, then it gets latched on nationally, then all the fans kind of take into it. This Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian switch at the offensive coordinator position is mostly a seamless handoff. I don't know if Lane Kiffin calls a better game last night for Alabama down the stretch. I don't know if he does. I don't think he does. Clemson found its rhythm against Alabama's offense. It couldn't throw the ball downfield. I mean, they needed a trick play to get a big throw. They needed our Darius Stewart, for crying out loud, to throw the ball in the fourth quarter to get a big play. I mean, Jalen Hurts is not going to light you up. That's just not the case. He's not going to do it against Clemson. But Alabama's defense needed to contain Clemson on that final drive, and they were too tired to do so. And Deshaun Watson getting the ball out quickly and knowing where his receivers were, where it was the difference down the stretch. It took a while to get there, but it was the difference down the stretch. Now, look, after the game, here is Clemson. Okay, look, just to give you an idea. Clemson is, there are two main schools in South Carolina. There's the University of South Carolina and there's Clemson. In between, there's Wofford, there's the Citadel, College of Charleston, South Carolina State, Coastal Carolina. So they've got all these smaller schools, but the two main programs, the house divided of the state, is Clemson and South Carolina. Dabo Sweeney started to build something at a time when Steve Spurrier was dominating the recruiting ranks in the state and around the state, and the SEC was the conference you wanted to play for if you were a big-time recruit. If you weren't going to go to South Carolina, you were going to go to Georgia. You were going to go somewhere in the SEC. It had the big money. It had the TV exposure. It was winning national titles. It was the best conference in college football 5-6 years ago. Dabo gets hired, and he's got to build something around that. The emergence of Spurrier, the emergence of the SEC. This is right in his backyard. And he does it. And he builds it. And he builds it with Taj Boyd. He builds it with CJ Spiller. It doesn't result in great things yet, but it's the building blocks of a program that last year had a real shot at winning it, and then this year did win it. Ben Bolwer, on the defensive side of the ball, after the game, says everything you want to know about what Clemson has finally done.
This is not for just us. This is for the Taj Boyds, the Stephon Anthony's, the Grady Jarrett's, the Nuke Hopkins, Sammy Watkins. Y'all built this. Y'all started this foundation. And all we did is build upon it. And we finished it. It's been 35 long years. Clemson, y'all been waiting 35 years. It's finally coming home, baby. It's coming home.
There's a guy who loves where he's at. Clemson is going to find no better, spokesman than Ben Bolwer. I mean, he's that outspoken. This is what I was leading up to. The fact is that when all of those elements are right around you, how do you do this? How do you pull this off? How do you build it in an area where kids are thinking, I could go to Clemson, but I could also play for Steve Spurrier. I could also play in the SEC. I could also be seen on national television. Clemson, I had to go look this up because I was sitting there going, I mean, I'm trying to put in perspective what Dabo Swinney is doing here. He gets hired in 2008 on an interim basis. He takes over in 2009 fully. His first bowl game in his first full season as the head coach of the Clemson Tigers, he goes to the Music City Bowl in Nashville where he beats Kentucky. Then they lose to South Florida in 2010. They lose to West Virginia in the Orange Bowl 70-33. And at this point, Clemson's wondering, do we got the right guy? A team just put 70 points on us in a bowl game. Do we have the right guy? Well, then Taj Boyd and Clemson starts heating up the national airwaves because they beat LSU in the Chick-fil-A Bowl. They beat Ohio State in the Orange Bowl 40-35. They beat Oklahoma and I think the Russell Athletics Bowl 40-6. Then they lose to Alabama in 2015 by 5 points in a game that went back and forth. It could have gone either way. And then this year, as Joe and I have talked about and a number of people have talked about it, they were built to beat Alabama. This wasn't an upset. They were built to do this. They could do this. Joe and I yesterday on the show were saying, look, there's a lot of things that you can check in the Alabama box. Okay, maybe give the slight edge defensively to Alabama, coaching to Alabama, right? There was a lot of boxes that you could check for the Crimson Tide. And yet, there was a feeling that Clemson was going to win this game. I had it. I felt like Clemson could win this game. Not because I was taking a chance, but because if you're going to build a team to beat Nick Saban, this is the team you build it on. Secondary that's going to shut you downfield, and going to put good pressure on your quarterback. A dynamic quarterback that can run the ball, throw with accuracy, and when he finds a rhythm, he finds a rhythm. This is what Clemson has been able to do again. And I can't stress this enough, under the environment and under the umbrella of the SEC dominance in his region and the fact that Steve Spurrier is right down the road recruiting as well. And by the way, doing really good things, winning 11 games every single season, playing in an SEC title game in 2010, right? Playing in very important games. Clemson hadn't reached that point yet. And now here he sits on top of the mountain. Now, from a fan perspective, let me just switch gears a little bit and wear a different hat. I'm a South Carolina guy. Clemson is the arch rival. I hate them. I've always hated them, etc. However, let me just say this. As a fan and a guy that likes to rub Clemson, you know, kind of rub it in to my Clemson fan, I have nothing. I have nothing anymore. My trash talking has been eliminated. I have zilch. Oh, West Virginia put up 70? Huh, but they have a national title. Oh, South Carolina went 5 years. Taj Boyd never beat them. Boom, they've got a national title. Anything that Clemson has failed to do, anything that Clemson has fallen apart on, anything that I can pick on has been destroyed because they have a national championship and I don't. That's the cool reality of sports. And look, Meryl Streep can say in a speech how, if you take away Hollywood, we'll be left to watching football and MMA, which is not arts. I'll take football. I'll always take football. I'll take MMA. I'll take sports. I don't know, and I don't even want to begin to comprehend how people who don't appreciate this unscripted drama, where do they get theirs from? You go to a movie, somebody wrote an ending. You watch a TV show, somebody knows exactly how this went down. You watch it for the finished version that somebody's dictated. Last night, think of the elements we saw in a game that had no script. Alabama scores with 2 minutes to go, and their defense can't stop a drive, and Clemson scores with a second remaining. Oh, and by the way, pick, illegal. Well, let's just throw that controversy in there, too. It's, to me, this is the value of sports. It's 4 hours last night. The game takes 4 hours. But in the end, the drama is worth it. I hope you didn't go to bed. I don't blame you if you did. It didn't look all that exciting at the halftime. It was, you know, 14-7, trade some punts, field position battle. But boy, did it get electric. Absolutely electric. And you got to see a guy that is going to be talked about and talked about and talked about and talked about leading all the way up to April's draft in Deshaun Watson at Clemson. All right, coming up, we're going to change gears. We're going to talk NFL playoffs. We're going to talk Packers coming up at the bottom of the hour. But let's get into Houston, and let's get into Pittsburgh, and let's get into Kansas City, and let's get into Atlanta and all the teams that will play in divisional weekend. That's coming up next. I am Tony D. This is SB Nation Radio. Hit me up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio.
This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony Desiri.
All right, 15 minutes. We're going to talk to Jason Hirschhorn from SB Nation on the Packers as they get ready for the Dallas Cowboys. By the way, a little interesting note, Joe George. Did you know this will be the eighth playoff meeting between the Cowboys and the Packers? Two storied franchise going all the way back to 1966.
Really?
Yes.
Guys, it feels like it's been so long. I can't even tell you the last time they played.
When was it? A couple years ago when Dez Bryant dropped that pass?
Oh, that's right. They did. I forgot about that game. Yeah.
1966 and then 1967 was the Ice Bowl. So I thought the Ice Bowl was the first meeting, but actually they had met a year before. But yeah, so eight times these two storied franchises have met. Dez Bryant didn't play in their week six matchup. And Ty Montgomery was still a wide receiver. So there's a lot of changed between the two teams when they meet at AT&T Stadium. How nervous are you for the Cowboys, though? Look, 13-3, home field advantage through the playoffs, great offensive line, run the ball really well, number one defense against the run. Does it feel like, though, that this is just a house of cards that will break apart if Aaron Yes. Rodgers gets hot? Like, that's, I can't escape that. And I know, Monday, people can yell at me saying, oh, you didn't see a 31-14. I'm just saying right now, it feels like when you have a rookie quarterback and a running back and Aaron Rodgers is as hot as he is, I feel like the Cowboys are like this house of cards and they tumble. I'm a little nervous.
No, I feel the same way. And I'm kind of, I really don't like the Cowboys, but I really would like to see them in the Super Bowl just because Houston fans really annoy me, and I think it would be fun to watch them suffer.
That wouldn't be bad. That wouldn't be a kind of nice, setting for the Super Bowl to have the Cowboys go to Houston, a place where they're despised.
Yeah, and there's never been a home team, right, that's played in the Super Bowl, but this would be like the closest thing ever.
Let me tell you,
Tampa play in somewhere in Florida?
No, let me, I'll give you the two closest Super Bowls. I really loved the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 14 was played between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the LA Rams. It was played in Pasadena. It wasn't played where the Rams play, but it was still in their city. Super Bowl 19 was played at Stanford Stadium in Palo Alto between the San Francisco 49ers and the Miami Dolphins. And again, not where the 49ers play, but San Francisco is the host city. So it wasn't in their stadium. No one has ever played in their stadium, but two have played close enough to their area and that, to be kind of considered home field, but it really wasn't because, I mean, it's a new stadium. It's not the same place. So, but this would be close enough. I mean, this would be close enough. One other Super Bowl that I actually kind of enjoyed, you want to talk about settings for like different little storylines. When I was dating my wife and ended up marrying my wife in the late 90s, Trent Dilfer was the quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Tony Dungy had a really good team, right? The Buccaneers defense and how good it was, and Sapp and Rondé Barber and John Lynch and all those guys, how good that defense was. Offensively, there was a problem with Trent Dilfer. He had Mike Allstott, and he had a couple of good receivers, but Trent Dilfer was sort of a problematic, polarizing figure in Tampa Bay. They had success, but you felt like the success was kind of pulled back a little bit because of Dilfer. So he became this polarizing figure, and he ended up leaving Tampa. And nobody was really shedding any tears that Trent Dilfer was no longer on the team. But he did take over the offense for the Baltimore Ravens in 2000. They went through a couple of quarterbacks, and he was finally landed on his job. And he guided the Ravens to the Super Bowl, where he went back to Tampa to lead the Ravens over the New York Giants.
Yeah, that was a fun Super Bowl. That was
a Super Bowl.
That was a fun one when they didn't they have back-to-back kickoff return touchdowns?
They did.
That was
they
a fun
did
one.
Have. And Kerry Collins of the New York Giants, I believe, still holds the record for the worst quarterback performance in a Super Bowl. Actually, it's close. Ben Roethlisberger did not have a very good Super Bowl game statistically in Super Bowl 40, the game they won against Seattle. Remember, they got the touchdown on the trick play,
Hines Ward.
Trick play to Antoine Randle L. So Ben Roethlisberger's statistics in that game were pretty bad.
Even worse than Grossman?
I think Grossman... I'll have to look this up, because you're right. Grossman had a pretty bad game, too. That was in the rain, though. That was,
yep.
was against the Indianapolis Colts.
Yes.
But Collins was... That Ravens defense was so good.
That was a really bad offensive Super Bowl.
Yeah, it really was. It was not one of its well-played Super Bowls.
Who did he beat out? Right. Was it Elvis Gerbach? Right?
Elvis Gerbach got the job the year later. Like, they were so confident in Trent Dilfer winning them a Super Bowl that they signed Elvis Gerbach to be the starting quarterback the second the Super Bowl was over. They were in negotiations to bring in another quarterback. That's the best. I hope, because this is, you know, this you'll be in Houston for the Super Bowl and all. I hope it's a great matchup. I don't care about the game. The game is you know, we can, it is what it is, right? We can have two great teams that play crappy. We can have two teams that don't excite us that could give us a thrilling game. But I hope the 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl in Houston, at least where you are two really good. It's like, this is the matchup you kind of want. There's no surprises, good fan bases. This feels like it's going to be big, you know, because let's be honest, Patriots Cowboys feels a lot bigger than Atlanta Houston, right? Well, in Houston, that would be great, but Atlanta Kansas City, right? If I gave you Atlanta Kansas City, we'd all be like, all right, it could be a good game, but
I don't know. I wouldn't get excited for it. You're right.
You know what I mean? It would be like, okay, all right. But if I gave you Cowboys Steelers, or if I gave you Cowboys Patriots, now we've got 2 weeks of fun. Now we've got fan bases and historical history angle to it all. I mean, it's got a lot of potential. I always, you know, because look, remember when I told you the story about how the Steelers hosted San Diego and lost to the Chargers like in 94?
Yeah.
Nobody was up for no one was up for San Francisco, San Diego. Super Bowl 29, ugh, it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. The Chargers, they just didn't have a chance against the 49ers. Now, the Steelers, I think, would have gotten blown out too, but it wasn't the Super Bowl that made everybody go, yeah, it was not, it just didn't give us that.
Yeah, the only thing I like about the Falcons is that it would kind of cap off like our year between the last Super Bowl and this one of like the Cavs win a title. It's, you know, it's been, Cleveland's never got anything. The Cubs win.
Yes.
It's been 35 years for Clemson and the Falcons don't have a Super Bowl victory in their franchise history. So like it would kind of cap off this like magical year of teams who've never won, all of a sudden
never
winning.
Won
it would be kind of cool. And Villanova winning, like, I mean, they've won before, but like, you know, it kind of would kind of cap off like a cool, like year to year basis.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. Cause it's, when was the last celebration in Atlanta? 95 for the World Series for the Braves. I'm thinking,
yeah,
if I'm not mistaken, 95. So it's a while. I mean, the Hawks aren't going to win anything anytime soon.
Hey, they're not trading Paul Millsap because they believe in Mike Dunleavy, okay?
Yeah, Mike Dunleavy is finally returning to us. Who is checking in, by the way, to make sure he's there. Oh, can I mention Jacksonville real quick before we go?
Yes.
Because Jacksonville hired Doug Marrone as their head coach, thus continuing the baffling decisions of the Jacksonville Jaguars. I have no problems with Doug Marrone if you feel like he's the best candidate because he took over on the interim head coaching job. But you mean to tell me, out of all the people that are out there, out of all the interviews that you could do, out of all the up-and-coming coordinators that you can find, the guy you want desperately is the guy you just had who basically left Buffalo with a couple of million dollars under his belt? That's the best you can do?
I didn't like it until I saw Tom Coughlin was being brought in to be the, I think his title is like the executive vice president of football operations. I liked it more then, but when it was just Marrone first report, I was like, oh, what are you doing? But Tom Coughlin kind of sweetens the
pot. Hey, maybe Kyle Shanahan, when they called him up and said, hey, would you mind coming down? He's like, are you going to get rid of Blake Bortles? No. All right, well, I can't. Thanks. Click. And that's it. Maybe that was the reason they went, oh, well, let's go with the guy who might like Blake Bortles so we don't look like a fool for drafting him number 3 overall. All right, coming up, we'll talk Green Bay Packers as they get ready for the Cowboys and the differences between the last time we saw this matchup back in Week 6. That's next on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony Desiri.
Now, the Green Bay Packers continue to be a story in this postseason because they really turned the season around. Now, they lost to the Cowboys earlier this season, but it's going to be a different rematch. It always is when you get this late. There's some missing pieces. There's some added pieces. So we're going to sort this all out. Jason Hirschhorn joins us from SB Nation, covers the Packers for AcmePackingCompany.com, joins us here on SB Nation Radio. How are you, Jason?
I'm doing great.
All right, let's get. I know it's early in the week, so I know this could change as this develops. But Jordy Nelson, where does he stand right now in terms of his availability for Sunday? Doesn't look like he'll go, but is there any hope that he will?
I mean, the Packers are playing up that possibility. Head coach Mike McCarthy met with the media on Monday, and he said that if Nelson can practice Saturday, and they were going to keep him with the rehab group until that point, but if he could go then at least he'd have an opportunity to suit up Sunday against the Cowboys. The reality is that this is a man with multiple fractured ribs. I cannot conceive of any scenario in which they're actually going to suit him up. As amazing of a story as that would be, I just don't think they're going to take that risk.
How difficult is it going to be to replace him? I understand the whole next man up mentality, but what does he bring that is going to be missing if he doesn't play?
Well, what Nelson does better than any receiver that the Packers have, and better than most receivers in the league, is working the sideline. So much of his production came when he was outside the numbers, that section between the painted numbers and the boundary. And the Packers have other receivers who have been productive doing that, but not to the degree that Nelson has. So it's going to require Devontae Adams to step up in that role. He's their next most productive receiver in doing those things. They're also probably going to need to see more from Jared Cook, the tight end, opening up the middle so that those corner areas become a little more spacious.
Let's go back to the four-game losing skid. So they're losing to Tennessee by giving up 47 points. They're losing to Washington, giving up 40-plus points in that game. Defensively, what adjustment did they make, or did they just find something? I mean, how do you go from that to turning it around and limiting teams to 10, 13, and change, and winning six in a row?
I mean, to a degree, I think it's a little bit of smoke and mirrors and also a little bit of the players getting healthier. During that skid that you mentioned, Packers were largely without their top corners. Demarius Randall has returned since then. He's been up and down, but it's still better to have him for the Packers than not have him. Clay Matthews missed some of that time. Now he's back, and if he's not 100% yet. And Nick Perry has also returned. So those things help, but it's also a little bit of the competition that they played subsequently. I mean, they weren't playing great offenses even this past weekend against the Giants. That was not a great offensive unit, even though they have players that everyone knows about, Eli Manning, Odell Beckham Jr., the rookie Sterling Shepard. So they were able to contain those offenses, but against a better offense like the Cowboys, one of the best in the league, it's very likely to be a different story.
As I mentioned earlier, whenever we get rematches in the playoffs that we had in the regular season, there's all sorts of factors that are going to be different. Many things are going to be different. What's the biggest difference between when you evaluate this game to what we saw back in Week 6?
I mean, it has to be the way the Packers' offense is performing. Going into that game against the Cowboys, the one that they lost 30-16, and you know that final score actually isn't totally indicative of how much of a rear kicking that was for the Packers. I mean, the Green Bay offense was pretty mediocre. It was about middle of the league in offensive DVOA. That is not the case right now. And weighted DVOA going into this week, they have the number one offense in the league. That is a huge difference. And obviously part of that is Aaron Rodgers kind of ironing out the flaws that he had in his game early in the season, the Packers coaching staff adjusting the scheme so that the receivers that they have could get open on a more frequent basis, and all that coming together. But I think those are the major differences going into this week.
Has Aaron Rodgers, in this run that they're on now, it's seven in a row and you include the playoff win, has he been more cautious in where he throws the football, or is he still taking those chances?
I think he's actually taking more chances now than he was earlier in the year. I mean, you saw him, especially during that losing streak, hold on to the ball for a really long time and take big sacks. Now, that's still happening on occasion. We saw that happen a couple of times against the Giants. But now he's throwing to receivers that aren't wide open, like we saw with the Devontae Adams touchdown against the Giants. I mean, there really wasn't much of a window to pass it into. And yeah, Rodgers had to dance around for over 8 seconds to get that opportunity. But I think if this game happened in Week 7, he doesn't make that throw. Maybe he tries to run it himself. Maybe he throws it out of bounds. Maybe he takes a sack. Those are the things that have changed, though, for that Packers offense.
You know, it's funny. You watch the Hail Mary in that game, and you say, "Wow, I see Aaron Rodgers do this all the time." What? How? Why are they so successful at that? Why is he so successful at that? Because on the one hand, you could say it's luck, but that looked like everybody knows where they're supposed to be. The ball is thrown in a particular trajectory. It seems like something you would work on. Every team does, but they seem to have more success at it than most.
Yeah, Rodgers does something that, not that other quarterbacks can't do, but they don't seem to do in those Hail Mary situations. I mean, he basically sends that football into orbit, and yeah. When it comes down, it is at such a sharp trajectory, as you mentioned, that these receivers have a better chance of collecting the football. I mean, Randall Cobb was not supposed to be the guy that catches that touchdown against the Giants. That's because it was supposed to go to Devonta Adams. He was what they called the jump man. But, you know, that ball was a little bit further. No one bothered to box Randall Cobb out. And he was, at one point, open enough to haul it in. So I think it's a little bit of luck, as you mentioned. I think it's a lot more of just the way that Rodgers arcs that football on those Hail Mary throws.
You know, I keep saying this a lot when you get stories, you know, nationally. A lot of times we get stories that are really, really filtered, and then it becomes basic. And then when you're closer to the story, you kind of know the nuances of it. There was a lot of conversation when the Packers were struggling that there was a disconnect between Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy. And nationally, it became a quarterback versus coach battle. Locally, what was that? Was it a bigger deal than it was? Was it a lighter deal than it was? Or was there something there?
I can't speak to there being a disconnect between Rodgers and McCarthy, but I can say there was a real speculation that McCarthy would not be retained going into 2017 uh-huh. if things didn't turn around, because this is an offense that over the course of McCarthy's tenure has been one of the best in the league. It's twice led the NFL in scoring, and since about the midpoint of 2015 up until the hot streak that, you know, we're talking about now, that offense looked like an average to maybe below average unit, and that's McCarthy's specialty. And if he can't bring the offense, there was a real question as to what he was really offering Green Bay at this point in his career. Obviously, he'd won a Super Bowl for them previously. That doesn't buy you indefinite job security. So the way that the offense has rebounded, though, I think really quelled those concerns. He looks like a coach that has, you know, a full grip on his job, and this offense is playing as well as any in the league.
Jason Hirschhorn joins us, acmepackingcompany.com. SB Nation covers the Packers as they'll face the Dallas Cowboys coming up on Sunday. All right, the story with Ty Montgomery, his transition to running back, was it out of necessity? Did they see something that they liked? How did he develop into that role?
I mean, it was definitely out of necessity to some degree. Eddie Lacy was put in IR earlier in the season. At that same time, James Starks was dealing with injuries of his own. Those were their top two running backs. They didn't really have a lot of other choices. I mean, the only other running back on the roster, really, was Aaron Ripkowski, who's more of a fullback, and they've subsequently used him as a ball carrier, but that's not really his defined role. So Ty Montgomery became more of an all-purpose running back because of that, but it's also something that they had toyed with in the past. Prior to Lacy going down, they'd used Montgomery to come out of the backfield. They actually started doing this early on during Montgomery's rookie year. They used Randall Cobb and Montgomery in the backfield at the same time against the San Francisco 49ers, I believe in week 4 of the 2015 season. So this is something that they've known he was able to do for some time, but I don't think they ever planned until much more recently on making that his full-time role.
The Giants can't run the football, but the Dallas Cowboys can. How much of a factor will that be for Dallas? How's the run defense for the Packers?
The run defense for the Packers is not what it was earlier in the year. I mean, there was a time when that Packers run defense was statistically one of the best in NFL history. That has changed. Part of that is all the injuries that they've dealt with, and part of that is also just they were playing weaker opponents early in the year and against better opponents like the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, the Cowboys were the first team to really run over the Packers defense. You know, those numbers change. And Ezekiel Elliott and offensive line are probably going to have a relatively productive day at a minimum because just how dominant they can be. The real question, though, is whether the run game can overcome what might be some rookie hiccups for Dak Prescott. I mean, he's played so well this season. You know, and some degree it seems foolish to assume that that's going to change, but this is still a rookie quarterback
yeah.
in a very big spot, a lot of pressure on them. You never know how they're going to respond.
Yeah, we've been talking about that, too. Just wondering if that house of cards is going to collapse just a little bit. I really appreciate it, Jason. Great insight on the Packers. Going to be a good game Sunday. At least we hope it's going to be a good game. Thank you so much for your insight.
All right, thanks for having me, Tony.
You got it. Jason Hirschhorn again, SB Nation. AcmePackingCompany.com is the website to get all your Packers news. All right, coming up, the Giants are sore losers, maybe. And there's more evidence of that. We'll tell you about their flight home. Yeah, that's next on SB Nation Radio. I am Tony D. Hit me up on Twitter @TonyDRadio on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony Desiri.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio. Again, follow me on Twitter at Tony D Radio. That's how you can communicate with the show. You can also email us if you'd like at Tony D Radio Show at yahoo.com. And, you know, we'll take your input that way. So the New York Giants. All right, I don't want to play big deal, little deal, no deal again, but this story, I have to admit, caught my attention. The Giants apparently trashed an airplane on their way back from Green Bay, allegedly. Okay, this coming out of the New York Post. The Giants took their frustrations by blowing their first shot at a Super Bowl by trashing a jumbo jet that carried them home, leaving it reeking of booze and forcing a major cleanup at Newark Airport. Passengers who boarded the plane afterward told the Post on Monday. All right, so what happened was the plane was coming in from Green Bay. It lands. They've got a group of people. They want to get on the plane because the plane's supposed to go somewhere else, and they can't. Because the airline says, oh, wait a minute, we need to clean this up a little bit. So Mark Croft, who said he was waiting on to board the United Airlines Flight 934 out of Newark, when the pilot came on and asked for everyone's patience and shared where the plane came from and that the plane needed extra help repairing and cleaning the interior. Now, did the pilot say where the plane came from to sort of tell people, yeah, it's coming from Green Bay, in case you were wondering where this plane was getting, wink, wink, and why we may need to clean it up, wink, wink.
Another I would do that.
I would, too. Like, hey, folks, you can't get on the plane right now. It needs to be cleaned because, I don't know if you know this, we just came back from Green Bay.
And these millionaire spoiled brats trashed right. by plane.
And in case you're living under a rock, you probably know who was coming in from Green Bay to New York City and why we need to clean the plane, wink, wink. Another 30 minutes passed and the gate agent told us that it was the Giants that destroyed the business class cabin. We saw service personnel walking countless sheet cushions off the plane. Oh, God. Upon entering the business class cabin, the cleaning scent only partially masked the alcohol smell. I had popcorn, chewing tobacco, and other food crumbs on my seat. What are the Giants doing trashing a plane? By the way, can I just ask a question? I know no way. This is just me. I don't know. I do not know the answer. Isn't that illegal nowadays? Like, trashing a plane or violently doing something to a plane, or not violently, but causing a ruckus in a plane, even if you're chartering it. I mean, doesn't that cause problems for the plane? Don't you want to sit down, be good? We're flying here. Don't start throwing food and trashing. Like, while the flight is in, while we're flying, I don't care that if you're the Giants, I don't care if you've paid for the charter. I don't care. You're not going to trash this plane because we still have to fly it. And because we still have to fly it, I don't want any disturbance in the cabin of somebody throwing food and making a mess and causing a disturbance. Calm down. Or am I just being a little bit more tight?
I don't know. I feel like that should be, I mean, first of all, it should just be like known to be a good person and not trash an airplane. But, I mean, they have fines for like taxis. If you get like sick in a taxi, like if you make a mess on a plane, like, can't there be some punishment for that?
Well, it's not their plane. Look, like NBA teams have their own plane. Like you can, you know, you gut it out, you put in some big seats. I mean, the Giants were flying a regular chartered plane. They bought the plane. They bought the use of the plane to go back and forth to Green Bay, so only they were on it. But then United's like, we got to still use this flight. Thanks for trashing our plane. I know you paid for it, but thanks for trashing our plane. A BBC weather woman, who's really pretty, by the way, she posted on Twitter a picture that said, "Go Giants," said, "Thanks, Giants, for trashing this plane so badly. It was delayed for 2 hours in a cleanup operation, which meant I didn't miss my connection."
Ooh.
Well, good for her. She's a pretty lady, though. A British TV weather forecaster turned Snapchat maven, as that's the way she was described in the Post. I always wanted to travel on a chartered plane with football players after they lost, just to see what that must be like. Well, we got Odell Beckham bashing a wall. We got the Giants trashing a plane. Like, what a bunch of sore babies. Grow up.
Yeah, they need some leadership in that locker room. They don't have any.
What is this? Grow up. Look what the Steelers just did with Joey Porter. Joey Porter forgot he's no longer a player. Stop trash talking to the Cincinnati Bengals last year. Stop getting arrested outside nightclubs. Mike Tomlin's like, you're suspended. That's it. No, get away from this team. We've got two more games. We got to win two games to go to the Super Bowl, and Joey Porter isn't going to prevent us from doing that by getting in trouble and being a distraction. Get out. What are the Giants doing trashing a plane? Give me a break. Good Lord. What if they had won? Would they have trashed a plane if they won in celebration? Being all excited? Trash their flight when they went back to Chicago after winning in Cleveland on the short little junket back to the Windy City? Do they trash their airliner in celebration of winning the first World Series since 1908? If they did, I didn't hear about it.
I didn't hear anything about it.
I don't know. NBA the NFL should just, here are nice.
Yeah, they should just get their own planes to be safe about this stuff.
Just get your
own
plane.
At least, like, if you're, you know, the Cavs and you're flying back to Cleveland after you beat the Warriors in Game 7, like, at least then, like, you could pop champagne, like, on the plane and, like, you know, the team just has to pay for it because it's, like, it's your plane. Like, you own that property. Like, that's a little more okay. Like, I don't have a problem with that. Like, frankly, like, if you're paying for it out of your pocket and you're not ruining other people's lives by doing it, then I'm sure United had to refund. Well, I don't
absolutely
know if I would hope they would do at least some kind of refund.
In the process of planes being delayed, don't planes go unless, well, outside of act of God, and this was not an act of God. They have to put you up if you're delayed, if you're stuck in a city, you know, like you have to. So like if you land, if that flight was supposed to go somewhere and you were supposed to make a connection and now you can't make the connection, you have to get on another flight. If you can't, you have to be put up. So it's a big hassle for United to have to deal with this. By the way, yeah, teams make more money. They should look if you're. It's better to lease than to buy a plane situation. Like planes are a big money sucker. But if you're a football team, buy your own jet.
You got the money.
Gut it out. Make it your own. Put a buffet in the back. Put some card tables in there. Put some TVs. Maybe a film room. Make it nice.
Do offensive linemen fit in normal chairs?
I would think not, right? Lord knows I don't fit in normal chairs. I'm going to have to buy two seats at the rate I'm going. All right. Sean Salisbury's coming up next. SB Nation Radio.